The following is a CNA podcast.
Welcome back to The Climate Conversations. I'm Jamie Ho. I'm talking about air conditioning today. The quest to cool ourselves via the humble AC has been with us for more than 100 years. Cool has been good, but there's a catch. Cooling in itself, especially via traditional air conditioning technology, has significant warming potentials. And the warmer it gets, does it mean simply using more air conditioning? Can we afford to do so? What alternatives are out there? Can we find a sweet spot where technology, human behavior, and government policy meet so that we can live in relative comfort without adding to this warming potential? With me to talk about this is Professor James Trevelyan, a mechanical engineer by profession and an inventor of the Close Comfort Personal Air Conditioner. He's based in Perth and joins me via Skype. James, welcome.
Thank you, Jamie.
Let me get my first question out of the way and just to frame our discussion, James. Explain exactly how the most widely used air conditioning technologies came to be over the years and how exactly do they cool and what is it that contributes to warming potentials and how it's energy intensive?
Well, let me try and explain. For anyone who can remember or does pump up a bike tire, when you pump hard, the pump gets hot. But that's because you're compressing the gas. Mm-hmm. Now, refrigerant gases get even hotter, but the most important thing is when you let the pressure off, they get really cold. So that's how fridges and air conditioners work. You get a compressor, it compresses gas, which gets warm, and then you cool that hot gas with some air that goes out the back end, and then that the liquid that results is allowed to expand, and it gets very cold, and you pass your indoor air through that, and it cools the indoor air, and in a humid climate like Singapore, you get lots of condensation at the same time on the pipes.
Yes.
And that, then you have to drain that water away. And that system has been used for over 100 years now. It was designed for cooling bricks and concrete. You cool the building and then the people will feel cool inside the building. That's the basic principle. But of course, it uses heaps of energy because most of the energy is cooling the bricks and the concrete and only a little bit ever gets to cool the people.
Exactly.
Now, why is that a problem going forward? Well, there's two things. The first is just generating that energy consumes resources. And particularly at the moment, to generate the electricity, we burn natural gas in Singapore, coal in some countries, and that's sending carbon dioxide into the atmosphere, which is warming up the climate. The second is that the refrigerant gases themselves, the ones we use at the moment, have a much bigger effect on the greenhouse effect than even carbon dioxide, up to a couple of thousand times or more. That's called the direct emissions, and that happens when the air conditioner is at the end of its life. If you have a split air conditioner, when it's installed or when it's maintained, some gas leaks out. And so these emissions from the refrigerant gas are also a major issue. Scientists have worked out that if we don't do something pretty drastic, we're heading for an extra half a degree of warming on top of everything else, because of the expansion and the use of air conditioners, particularly. Jamie, as the climate gets hotter, more and more people need air conditioning. It's not just a preference, they need it.
Yeah, I'm going to get into that in a little while, but let's talk a little bit about the gases in and of themselves, and these are the dreaded HFCs. Now, explain to us a little bit how they came to be used so widely, and exactly what's being done these days when it comes to HFCs?
Good question. So we started with things called CFCs, which are chlorofluorocarbons, and they were used from the 1960s, well, even before then. And their big problem was that they helped to destroy ozone. Mm-hmm. So particularly us in Australia, we've got this ozone hole. It's not as bad as it used to be, but I can remember days in which the sky would go purple.
Really?
And your skin would get burnt literally in 10 minutes. Mm. You would have sunburn. And that's when a particularly weak area of the ozone layer came overhead. And, you know, you get forecasts on the weather each night, you know, how bad the ozone hole is going to be. Luckily, there was a global treaty in 1972 called the Montreal Protocol to phase out these CFCs and other substances that harm the ozone layer. And so we went from that to what are called HFCs, which did not harm the ozone layer, but definitely have a big impact on the greenhouse effect. And while air conditioners were just used by a few people, it wasn't a big issue. But now air conditioners are becoming really widespread. More and more people need them as the climate warms. it's becoming a much bigger problem. So as a result of that, countries in the world got together in Kigali in 2016, and in a relatively quiet process, you know, it didn't hit the headlines at the time.
Yeah.
They signed an amendment to that Montreal Protocol. That Montreal Protocol has been amazingly effective. You know, the ozone layer is well on its way to healing now. So that same mechanism was adopted to phase out these HFCs progressively over time. So the idea is to phase them out and hopefully to get rid of all of their use by around 2050, sometime then or a little bit later.
I want to get your take first as well on your view on, as you say, the Montreal Protocol, because not many people know about it. And it's amazing to me how it was so successful in dealing with the ozone layer. How is it that people have not been able to replicate the kind of work that they did on CFCs elsewhere? Hopefully, they'll be much more successful when it comes to HFCs. But what are the sort of obstacles in phasing out HFCs? I suppose not just in terms of demand for HFCs via air conditioning, but alternatives. What alternatives are out there to HFCs in air conditioning systems?
For big air conditioning, for supermarkets, refrigeration systems, and so on, we have several options. And we can go back to the original refrigerants that we use, carbon dioxide itself, which can be used as a refrigerant, or ammonia. These gases were phased out because the CFCs before them and the HFCs were more efficient with the kinds of equipment that we had access to 50 and 60 years ago. But technology has changed, so we can go back to using those natural refrigerants.
Yeah,
that's one of the most effective ways for dealing with these big systems.
That is used for the bigger cooling systems, not for, let's say, regular consumer cooling.
That's correct. So, for example, you know, a big building where you've got lots and lots of people working, or big shopping malls, airports, and so on and so forth. These systems are pretty efficient. And because the volume of the building is large, the number of people is large compared with the surface area, the energy consumption per person is actually not that bad.
Mm-hmm.
Where we've really got a headache is residential systems,
mm-hmm.
because the demand is mushrooming. And there's another effect that not so many people are aware of. It's called the urban heat island effect.
Yeah.
And even I, as an engineer, I was actually really surprised when I did some analysis just a couple of weeks back. And I looked at what's happening in Australian cities and Southeast Asian cities. The warming in cities caused by this urban heat island effect, and I'll come to what causes it in a minute, that warming is twice as fast or three times as fast as climate warming.
Yep.
That really surprised me. So what's it caused by? Well, first of all, we build cities, we cut down trees, and trees are a great way of keeping the place cool, trees and vegetation. The next is that we drain away the water very quickly. So instead of evaporating the water through the trees and vegetation, which provides a cooling effect, we send it out through pipes to the ocean or down to drains and so on and so forth. We pave the surface with roads that get hot in the sunlight. We have roofs that get hot in the sunlight.
Yeah.
And we have cooling systems in buildings which move the heat of the building into the streets. Heating them up. We have vehicles moving through, the vehicle engines release heat, the air conditioners in those vehicles release heat. So all of these heating effects come together, and part of that is due to air conditioning. And here's the catch, Jamie.
Mm-hmm.
The warmer it gets, the less efficient the air conditioners become, so
exactly.
The more heat they put out.
Yeah.
This is just as big an issue as climate warming. And when you think that many cities now in the world, you're well above not in the comfort temperature, you're well into the temperatures which are real threats to human health.
Here's the catch, though. What we are trying to deal with then, if you use the urban heat island as an example, is still trying to cool systems in buildings, for example, that were built 10, 20, 30, sometimes 40 years ago, and which probably weren't built with modern cooling technologies in mind, right?
Absolutely.
Therefore, trying to cool them is a bit of a headache, isn't it? Because it means really refurbishing, rehauling, and just basically rebuilding even.
Horrendous expense. That's why I'm so excited about the work that we've done. It's so simple when you look at it. Bricks and concrete don't need to be cooled.
Mm-hmm.
It's only people. And we can design machines to work satisfactorily any temperature we want. It's just the people that need cooling. So if we think about just cooling people, most of the time, except when we're in crowds all in the same space, but certainly when we're at home, working away from other people, if we can keep people cool, and you can do that with a fraction of the amount of energy, we get rid of so many of these other problems. The great thing is, it's not any good for the environment, it's actually cheaper for people.
I'm going to let you sort of explain this to me using an example. Let's say we're here in Singapore, high humidity, high heat, and I gave you sort of a blank sheet to develop a new residential system using really, really carbon efficient systems, using natural refrigerants. How would you envision for us an apartment looking like? What kind of refrigeration, what kind of cooling is it going to use, and how efficient is it going to be?
Well, Jamie, the thing is, inventions don't happen that way.
Yeah.
Inventions happen as much by chance, sometimes just sheer accidents. And you look at an idea and say, gee, that would be really good.
Yeah.
Let me explain how it happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
So my wife is from Pakistan, and I spent quite a bit of time there with her family. And I not only, I still am in love with my wife, but I also am in love with Pakistan mangoes.
Okay, yeah, well, all of us
and I'm
are.
I'm sure there's lots of other great mangoes, but Pakistan mangoes are really fantastic. The reason why they're fantastic is because they're picked off the tree at just the right moment.
Yes.
So they spend 10 days ripening in temperatures of around 45 degrees.
Oh, goodness, yeah.
Worst thing you can do is put them in the fridge.
Okay.
They actually have to sit in that air temperature to get that perfect flavor. So you've got to be there when the air temperature is 45 degrees to get those beautiful mangoes. There I was, because there was a shortage of electricity because too many people plugging in old-fashioned residential air conditioners. The electricity supply is intermittent. So there I was at 2 o'clock in the morning, over 40 degrees in the bedroom, total silence, no fan, no light, no AC. Just the sound of the mosquitoes lining up for their bombing run. You got the idea?
Mm-hmm.
Sweat running down my nose. I said, there has to be a better way to keep cool.
Yes.
Now, as an engineer, this was a wonderful technical challenge. And I have to confess, my students gave me some ideas. So I set about it. And after about 10 years, I had a prototype, which worked really well. It was only later that I realized that this technology, which we commercialized in Pakistan, the main attraction, Jamie, is that it's so cheap. We reduced their monthly bill from about $250 down to about 15.
How does it work? I mean, I'm dying to know now.
And that's because these machines are so efficient. It was only later that I thought, gee, they'd be really good in Singapore too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but Singapore is a wealthy country, so they're not so much concerned about, you know, the electricity cost. It's actually a health factor. I'm sure you've heard of the sick building syndrome.
Yes.
Traditional air conditioners are a menace in terms of health. Unless you're really assiduous about getting them maintained and properly cleaned and so on, they just circulate the same air over and over again. And it's much healthier to have fresh air circulating. So the idea behind this invention is you have the fresh air, you have the windows open, and you just provide a localized cooling breeze for anybody who wants to be cool. And so something which was there as almost as a necessity for me in Pakistan,
mm-hmm.
although, as I said, it was like a technical curiosity to begin with, is not only the answer to a problem in Pakistan, but actually can be the answer to a global problem. And that was the really exciting part. I gradually realized that this technology was going to be one of the answers that we can roll out to deal with this climate challenge.
Well, explain a little bit to me then what the technology is. I presume it does away with HFCs. How does it actually cool the ambient temperature around somebody?
So imagine a tiny fridge with a fan inside, and it just blows the cool air from the fridge at you.
Mm-hmm.
That's the basic principle, number one. Number two is we can use a tiny refrigeration circuit.
Okay.
Number three is because it's tiny. Now, I have to admit that at the moment we're using an HFC gas, R134A.
Okay.
But we're changing over to R290, which has a negligible greenhouse impact.
Okay.
And there's hardly any of this gas. It's just, you know, less than 100 grams. So we use this R290 gas, which is otherwise known as propane. It's a great refrigerant. Works really well.
Yeah.
Natural substance, it's non-toxic. Its only issue is that it's a flammable gas.
Exactly, yeah.
That means you can use it quite safely if you use it in tiny quantities like we do.
Okay.
You can't use it for the conventional split systems.
I understand.
Because it's too much of a fire hazard. And particularly as, you know, you can imagine during maintenance, you get a bit leaking and so on. That's a major safety issue. Whereas with our little machines, they're welded up in the factory, so there's no question of any risk. And there's less propane in there than, I believe, than a typical can of shaving cream has propellant.
Yeah, that's the challenge, isn't it? That when you have alternatives to HFCs, for example, in this case, propane, in certain sort of urban settings, maybe in Singapore where the cooling infrastructure is already existing, switching over to something like that would be quite different from a place like Pakistan or India, would it be?
You're making a valid point there. So air conditioning is very much a social phenomenon. And we have to think about how people use it as much as the technology.
Mm.
The best option for Singapore could be a variety of approaches. Some people use personal air conditioning. Some people use traditional air conditioning. You know, Singapore government is looking at ways to avoid this problem in many different techniques. For example, for the time being, you're importing natural gas for the power stations. Now, when that natural gas arrives, it arrives as a highly refrigerated liquid in ships, a lot of it from Western Australia, where I come from.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to warm that up, you generate a lot of cool air.
What do you do with that? Yeah.
So there's actually an idea to extract heat from buildings in Singapore and use it for heating up this natural gas.
Yeah.
You get refrigeration and the natural gas at the same time. Now, later on down the line, we hope we're going to be supplying hydrogen, and possibly that hydrogen will arrive in liquid form, even colder.
Mm.
So that's one of the approaches that you can use in a city like Singapore. There's already people developing this idea. I believe there's some demonstration projects underway for data centers, and I have some friends at National University of Singapore.
Yeah.
You know, they're doing great work in that area. We have to understand there's lots of different ways to approach this problem. And one of the things you know for sure about technology is that in 10 years' time, there will be things here that we never dreamed of before. But at the same time, we are facing an existential issue with climate change. We have to do things with the technologies that we have today. And sure, if better ideas come along that turn out to be more economic in a few years' time, that's even better. But I'm very confident that the technologies we've got at the moment can fix this problem.
Yeah. I mean, I want to ask you a philosophical question as well, because if using Pakistan as an example and places like India where you have huge urban environments, there's something to be said as well as temperatures rise, as urban heat islands get worse, to sort of demand the right to cool and to cool themselves with existing technology. And, you know, it's just unfortunate that existing technology for many people is going to still depend on HFCs. It's still going to depend on rather inefficient systems. How do we get around this? Of course, if we could scale up the kind of technology that you have described, that would be ideal. But we do seem to be sort of stuck infrastructurally, or are you optimistic as far as that's concerned?
Well, that's the part of the reason for selling our machines in Pakistan, and we hope to do that in India before too long.
Mm-hmm.
People love them. People are absolutely thrilled with them. It's important to understand that human comfort perception is something very subjective.
Yeah.
We can provide the kind of comfort that enables people to be productive and, above all, to get a good night's sleep. Now, that's what a couple of billion people simply go without good night's sleep for months at a time.
Yeah.
And that's why productivity is very low in countries like India and Pakistan, one of the main reasons. Think what's happened to Singapore with the introduction of air conditioning, and imagine that kind of economic transformation across South Asia. You're transforming 2 billion people into an economic powerhouse, and anything is possible then.
Yeah, it's something that our former Prime Minister Lee Kuan Yew has spoken about as well, the miracle that air conditioning gave Singapore and allowed us to do the things that we never imagined doing in the 60s and in the 70s.
We have to do it a different way, and we can do it a different way. It was Mahatma Gandhi who was actually asked, I think by a British journalist. He said, "Mr. Gandhi, is it your intention to argue that all Indians should have the same standard of living as us in England?"
Mm-hmm.
I think he was visiting England at the time.
Yeah.
And Gandhi said, "Well, yes, hypothetically," he said, "but the planet simply doesn't have the resources for that."
Yeah.
We have to be smarter, and we have to do it a different way.
Yeah.
So it's really wonderful. You know, we've come up with something which will work. People have used it in the hottest parts of Pakistan, and they're really happy with it. And as I said to you right at the beginning, not only is it good for the planet and good for the environment, but it's actually an awful lot cheaper for families. And as I said, you know, we reduce energy bills. And the figures I'm giving you for just a single bedroom, right?
Mm-hmm.
Single bedroom in summer, it'll cost you $150 to $250 US dollars a month in electricity and generator costs. And we reduce that down to about $15.
Okay.
So you can imagine people are very, very happy. We just need to do it on a much bigger scale.
I want to ask you a question as well, and probably your last question on something that you mentioned, which is very intriguing, and that's the human perception of his own comfort levels.
Yes.
The kind of temperatures that you think you want to operate in and you think you can and should operate in. Obviously, in a place like Singapore, we're trying to wean people off air conditioning, one. Two, if they really do need to just, you know, doesn't have to be that cool. And it's going to be a slog because, you know, Singaporeans, we've become used to temperatures that, you know, set at 20 degrees or something ridiculous like that. But, you know, in your research, have you found a nice balance where you can tell people that, you know, look, cooling doesn't have to be to that degree with a combination of technology, but changed human behavior, changed human expectations. We can actually shift the needle a little bit.
Jamie, you're quite right. And there's some really interesting physiological research coming out on this,
mm-hmm.
that actually exposure to heat and, for that matter, cold, you know, moderate discomfort, is actually extremely good for your health. Seriously.
Yeah.
So one of the things we know is if you allow people to control temperature to whatever they want, the vast majority of people will choose a temperature of about 21, 22 degrees centigrade, and they'll just leave it like that.
Yeah.
They want to be in that temperature year in, year out. That's
yes.
why carrying a cardigan is absolutely essential in a country like Singapore.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
However, what we found with our users, and I've waited until people actually reported it, I sensed this myself, but I didn't trust my own sensations. I wanted to hear it from other people.
Mm-hmm.
The more they use our machines, the more they say, I need less air conditioning. I actually feel much less uncomfortable when I am in the hot air outside. And that's because their natural adaptation has started to return.
I see.
When you live in an artificial environment at 21 or 22 degrees centigrade, you lose that ability to adapt to heat. And that's a really interesting physiological thing. Your heart actually gets more lazy. Your lungs get more lazy. You lose your adaptation ability. So when you do go outside in the hot air, you go, oh, phew, I've got to get back inside. Quick.
Yeah.
And people have come to us and said, you know, I've noticed I feel more comfortable overall. I feel healthier. And that's been an unexpected reward from all of this.
Well, on that note, I must tell you that I don't sleep with the air conditioning. I sleep with the fan and I'm very comfortable with that.
Well done, Jamie. Great.
Well, James, thank you so very much for speaking to me.
Thank you, Jamie, and all the very best.
Thank you, James, and thank you for listening to The Climate Conversations. Stay up to date on CNA's coverage of climate change on cna.asia. It's all on the orange tab. You can also find this and other CNA podcasts on our website and on iTunes and Spotify. Behind this podcast are Crispina Robert, Aaron Lowe, and Lin Zuling. I'm Jamie Ho, signing off till we meet next time.